Chapter 12. We're from the government, and we're here to help you. This chapter contains no legal advice. It does, however, contain research for the purpose of education. The founder of natural hygiene was a naturopath named Dr. Herbert Shelton. He has many wonderful texts you can spend time learning with, and they are located in the reference section of this book. He said, quote, "The people shall be taught that they are free, and shall cherish the illusion all their lives. The greatest foe to the liberties of the people is their own illusion of liberty." Unquote. Mostly everyone concerned about the vaccine dilemma comes face to face with their own personal battle with Big Brother. I have written this book not only to give you the knowledge necessary to battle Big Brother bureaucracy, but to stand up for your God-given and unalienable right to not be forcefully medicated, and to not have your children forcefully medicated against your will. The medical cartel has become a very powerful form of government that we all must stand up and speak out against. Using the political climate of 9/11, they now plan on moving their influence within government from one of advisory power to absolute power over decisions on what is best for you and your children. And of course, their toxic products reign supreme, as everything else more natural will be outlawed. They have many operatives in each state that simply scare lawmakers into submission with erroneous data, with an end result being more deeply oppressive laws which force people to receive vaccines and force parents to vaccinate children against their will. Putting it quite frankly, you have to become a bulldog with these issues if you wish to keep yourself and your family free from harm. Until the day comes where they admit, okay, the nation is essentially bankrupt, you have no rights, and will do whatever the state tells you to do, since it's for the good of the people. No one can legally force you or your children to be medicated against your will. No one. If we are a truly free society, you are not the pet of the state, and will decide for yourself what is best for your family's bodies, so long as you don't disturb the health of anyone else. Some more aggressive medical cartel states, like New York, Maryland, Massachusetts, and West Virginia, and the worst of them all now being California, may insist you comply with standardized vaccine codes, but you always have a way out of their traps if you work at it hard enough. You will find examples of this in the remedies section of the book, which follows. For now, I will give you vital background information on how to fight and beat this oppressive vaccine system. It sure seems at times that many lawmakers are on the payroll of the medical cartel. By owning stock in companies, granted a position on a company board, receiving a huge grant from a company for supporting vaccine programs, not to forget a myriad of illegal gift transfers, the list of rewards is endless for those who play the game. Overzealous ones, such as the former Senator and Secretary of State, dear God, Hillary of New York, are attempting to legislate vaccine program mandates on the federal level. If not done directly, they will attempt to slip these in under other legislation right under the nose of the people, so be very careful to watch the particular politics of your state. As it is, they have most schools and now colleges requiring vaccines for admission. They want to include a vaccine record of every person in America, if not the world, on a standardized database to make sure they miss no one. This was the national health care card Hillary Clinton attempted to push on the American public through her national health care plan. The medical cartel wants to refuse you airline travel, hotel and car reservation privileges if you refuse to receive your yearly dose of vaccines. They want us all to be their pets, caring for us by making sure we have all our shots. These are some very important issues to watch keenly in the years which follow this new century. Mark my word, if people do not stand up and speak out against such oppression and tyranny, it will happen sooner than you may think. Everyone will have a nice little vaccine giver show up at their door one day and say, "Hello, I'm from the Government Department of Vaccinations, and I'm here to help you comply with the law today by getting you and your family up to date with your yearly vaccines. Would you like to sit or bend over?" I have heard many horror stories over the years of practicing in the northeastern United States that schools hassle parents who even question the validity of vaccines for their children. Several school officials even told parents in my practice that they would contact the DCF if they even dared to do such an injustice to their children by not vaccinating them. Parents who refuse vaccinations for newborns at hospitals have also been reported to the DCF. Don't let this worry or intimidate you. You still have rights to exercise in this country regarding the issue, and no overzealous school nurse, principal, or DCF flunky can take those rights away. You will need to learn how to show your teeth, however. Understand right now that our country was founded on creator-endowed unalienable rights that do not come from the Constitution, but from God and nature. When the tax protesters, our early founding fathers, revolted to form our great nation, after the war was won, they ended up attempting to discover a remedy on paper to make sure the tyranny they experienced would never happen again. This remedy was not the Constitution of these United States, but the Federalist Papers. Any one of the founding fathers of the Constitution could walk into Congress today and make them all look like the corrupted band of idiots they have truly become. The founding fathers were a collective of brilliant minds who knew what oppression and tyranny were. They knew they needed some form of centralized government to deal with issues like commerce between states and war, but that was it. They left the rest up to the individual states. When the Treaty of Peace was signed with Great Britain after the revolt, the document acknowledged that we were each given sovereign power equal to the king individually. We in America became sovereigns without subjects. Each man and woman a sovereign in their own right, bowing only to God. Then came the Constitution, but the Constitution does not give you any creator-endowed and unalienable rights. Only God can give you those. This is the basis of what is called the common law. Your God-given, unalienable rights are exercisable under the common law, which is the source of this country. The common law is based on the Bible, both Old and New Testaments, primarily centered around the Ten Commandments. But where have we gone since this time? We used to be citizens of our sovereign state, not federal citizens. The truth is, you are still a citizen of your sovereign state. The Constitution still defines a very limited power to a centralized federal government, and we were conceived and created as a republic, not a democracy. In a republic, you are a sovereign without subjects. In a democracy, everyone votes to see what the majority wants, and elected officials have more power over decisions that affect everyone's lives. There is a big difference between the two. In truth, our Constitution provides that each state has powers far beyond those of the federal government. But then our elected officials at the federal end got involved with a bunch of internal bankers, and we had a civil war. We started borrowing money from European banks and getting into immense debt. After the Civil War came the 14th Amendment, which history claims is what freed slaves from the South. Article 4, Section 2 of the Constitution reads, quote, "The citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens in the federal states," unquote. The 14th Amendment reads, quote, "All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside," unquote. These 14th Amendment citizens are spelled with a small c. The ones in the original Constitution, Article 4, Section 2, are spelled with a capital C. Did you know there was a difference? A capital C citizen is a state citizen with full common law rights. A 14th Amendment small c citizen is a federal citizen. If you consider yourself a 14th Amendment small c citizen, then you are first and foremost a federal citizen and not a sovereign. What does this mean? Well, the federal government is the United States. But there are three distinctly different United States as defined by the U.S. Supreme Court. The first is the United States of America, which is the American territory. The second is the Union of the Several States, usually referred to as these United States, with the United States in all small letters, representing more of a location than an actual noun. The third is an artificial corporate entity called the United States, or United States, listed just as you see in beginning capital letters or all caps. This is what is referred to as the federal government. They are actually a corporation which has been created for dealing with the details of doing business among the several states, and foreign policies such as war and the military. You will notice that 14th Amendment citizens who have been naturalized have all their rights granted to them by the Constitution. But capital C citizens of the Constitution had all their common law rights to begin with, and are sovereigns in their own right first, above and beyond any state or federal mandate. In a sense, 14th Amendment citizens are more federal citizens, controlled by the laws formed by the Federal United States Corporation. Capital C original citizens are governed only by common law, the original Constitution of these United States with the Bill of Rights, and the laws of their particular state. Don't think these small and capital C's don't matter. This was carefully planned. 14th Amendment citizens are subjects first of the federal government, and secondly to God, the common law, and the federal state. Now, what does all this have to do with vaccines and your right to not vaccinate? We are all capital C citizens, governed by the common law unless we sign a contract in which we agree to trade those common law rights for some federally provided privileges. This occurs every time you sign a 1040 tax form or the like, obtain a marriage license, and apply for a driver's license. You are always signing your common law rights away without even realizing you are doing so. No matter what anyone tells you, if you have to sign for something, that something is not mandatory. You are volunteering to participate in it. When you sign a marriage license, for example, your marriage is now a three-way legal partnership between the man, wife, and state. This is how the state steps in and helps you make decisions on vaccinating your children, because if you have a state marriage license, your children are one-third the ward of the state. If you say no vaccines for my kids, and some overzealous medical doctor feels your decision to not vaccinate is child abuse, the state DCF can send police to your home, grab your kids, and forcefully vaccinate them. There have been several cases in America where the parents have refused medical care, none with vaccines as yet, for sick children with cancer, and the DCF stepped in, took the child, and gave them the treatment against the parents' will. Unless we are all very careful, soon they will be doing this with vaccines, and not only with children, but with adults as well. Children are a gift from God under the common law, and certainly cannot be taken from the parent because they refuse to medicate the way the state mandates. When you begin to assert your rights as a free, sovereign human being, as opposed to the all capital letters spelt individual or person, which are corporate terms in commerce, you will realize how you are not a subject to any code law of the United States Corporation unless you intentionally contract with them. Who exactly are you? These points of commerce and contract fall under a system of commercial law, which some law researchers say has become the real law of the land, called the Uniform Commercial Code, or UCC. The concepts centered around learning the UCC to protect yourself and your family are not difficult, but they are somewhat time-consuming in the beginning, primarily due to the fact that most people need a sufficient amount of time to become at least moderately unbrainwashed, for lack of a better term. The average person has no concept of freedom such as the liberty outlined in the original Constitution of these United States. He has a very difficult time comprehending that he can be a sovereign, a totally free human being living under the common law, if he so chooses and takes the appropriate steps to do so. First and foremost, you need to figure out who, on this earth, you truly are. Are you capital letters John Quincy Public? Or John Quincy Public? Are you both? Did you know there was a difference? Have you ever noticed that the all-capital version of your given name appears on virtually every piece of official printing out there? Well, there is a huge difference between these representations of your being. The natural English language, upper and lowercase version, represents the living, breathing, flesh and blood being that you truly are, the one God created. The other, all caps version, represents a corporate trust entity, what is called a person or individual within commerce and corporate structure. This is who all governments would like you to believe you are. The most fundamental principle in understanding the UCC is that the powers that be already consider you a sovereign, but they keep it secret. They really don't want you knowing about it. They want to keep you in the dark about your freedom for, well, your entire life if they can. Keeping you as a volunteer federal slave. It all begins at your birth, when your parents file a birth certificate with the state. That piece of paper is your entryway into federal serfdom, if you do nothing else to reclaim it. From that birth certificate, the federal government, who illegally gave away Congress's sole authority to coin gold and silver as real money, set up a corporate trust account using the name you were given in all capital letters, as a trust entity and your labor as its value, as calculated by the money you will generate hypothetically throughout your anticipated lifetime. They then set up a bond, a trust instrument which states the value of a thing, namely you, affix a value of currency to it, then offer it as collateral to the Federal Reserve banking system. They use your birth certificate as a marker of labor, and then offer it as collateral to a privately owned corporation? Yes, that's exactly right. This is a softer definition of serfdom and slavery, but slavery nonetheless. Haven't you ever wondered why all official documents and licenses have a form of your name seen in all capital letters? This is not proper English, yet it is persistently done. Do you suppose it is a mistake, or just for no good reason? It is for a very good reason, in fact. The all-capital name is not you, the living, breathing, flesh-and-blood human being. It is technically called your straw man, or the trust entity set up upon the filing of your birth certificate. This all-capital corporate person is who the powers that be want you to believe you are. You are not that person or individual. You are a naturally born human being with creator-endowed common law rights, but you have to know this. If you do not, you default to their brand of corporate person slavery. How can they do this? It all started in the late 1800s when wealthy European bankers, members of the Illuminati, of course, began sabotaging the gold and silver money flow in America. They again used the Hegelian philosophy, creating a problem, instituting and witnessing the reaction, fear and frustration, and then generously offering a solution. Their manipulation of the gold and silver markets led to several shortages, which created havoc in the states. They offered a solution, then, of their vast experience and expertise in the field of banking, suggesting they take control of the flow of currency in America through a centralized United States corporate banking system. In this system, the bankers own the fiat, fictitious money, which inherently has no value, especially when compared to gold and silver coin. Congress stops issuing gold and silver coin and suspends their control of America's money supply indefinitely. Now, a privately owned corporation that is not part of the government will have the ability to own and control the flow of paper currency, lending it to the government for distribution amongst the people. The government can have as much as they want, but they will actually have to borrow it from the Federal Reserve banks, with interest attached. Sound like a deal you would take if you were a leader? No, I didn't think so. But the federal government finally caved in 1913, signing into effect the Federal Reserve Act, culminating with going off the gold standard illegally in 1933. Now, the government had Federal Reserve Notes, or FRNs. These had to be paid back to the Federal Reserve banks at a decided interest rate, and until the mid-1920s, that interest was to be paid in gold. What a great deal! They issue paper money and get gold in return? Can anyone here say robbery? For years, then, these European bankers were paid their interest sums in gold, shipped over from our resources on a regular basis. Then the mines ran low, and the gold began to run scarce around the mid-1920s, and we could no longer pay the interest in this way. This was the primary cause of the Great Depression, which began in 1929. We couldn't pay the interest, so the European bankers stopped lending us their fiat, worthless paper money. So, to remedy this for the bankers in 1933, Roosevelt declared a national emergency and signed an executive order which said every person and corporation needs to send in their gold to the federal government to be exchanged for worthless paper script, FRNs. Of course, people did not know that they are considered human beings, natural flesh and blood existing beings, and they were not persons. The word person or individual may include a natural existing flesh and blood human being, but it could also simply mean any or all corporations. Of course, the executive order was not specific to this point. If in 1933 people knew to simply call the government on this point, they would have been able to keep their gold. But that wasn't the case. People turned in their gold for worthless paper. The federal government then paid what they could to the bankers in gold to ease the debt, and offered an alternative plan for investment payment. Your labor. This was accomplished through a House joint resolution in 1933, called H.J.R. 192. Within the tenets of this resolution, the legal gold and silver standard was to be suspended indefinitely, a completely illegal act since this portion of the Constitution, rendering Congress the full power of money creation, cannot be amended or suspended in any way. So these acts illegally became public policy, a very gray area of law. And paper money would now be the main currency of the United States Corporation, along with a myriad of other banking instruments, such as bonds, promissory notes, drafts, and bills of exchange. Only FRNs, however, were the property of the bankers, loaned to the federal government at interest. The other debt elimination instruments could be made by anyone, not necessarily to pay for anything, but to discharge debts. You were able to create credit, and the federal government promises to discharge that credit with this fiat money. The creators of H.J.R. 192 were aware that trading your labor, i.e., using the hard-earned wages of Americans as collateral and a substitute for the interest payment owed by the federal government, is simply another form of slavery. Isn't slavery supposed to be illegal in America? Well, yes it is. So they formulated a plan through H.J.R. 192, which is not spelled out specifically this way, but certainly implied, whereas all Americans would now have their debts totally paid off by the federal government, since there was no longer any legal money in existence. You can go out and buy a TV with their worthless script, FRNs, and they will ensure payment for the item at some later date, when the gold standard returns. That is the entire concept behind FRNs. They pay nothing. How can they? They are not backed by anything with intrinsic value, like gold, silver, or even simple rocks. They are essentially instruments of debt owed by the federal government to the bankers. They are only backed by your supposed labor power over your lifetime, and the promise that the government will pay for the debts they incur at some later date. Sound confusing? Well, it is. It was meant to be this way. So, Federal Reserve notes are paper you can now use for legal tender for the payment of public and private debts. You go buy stuff with them when you are able to work for enough of them, and by handing them to someone you are essentially saying, "The government told me they will pay me when the gold standard comes back, so when that happens I will pay you as well." Then that person hands the paper you just gave him to someone else, and he to someone else, and the cycle goes on and on. Over the decades, people have totally lost sight of how this system should be working. But back in the early days, plenty of people knew and were not very happy about it. This is why H.J.R. needed to provide an exemption or remedy for the Americans who were now earning nothing of worth for their labor. The government says here that the debts of Americans will be paid, dollar for dollar, in whatever currency the government says is legal tender. It was now against public policy for anyone to ask for any specific form of payment. Your remedy is exactly this, offered by H.J.R. 192 of 1933. If you incur a debt from a credit card, loan, or a credit account at the local store, That debt can be discharged with any number of debt elimination instruments made legal by the federal government's banking laws. You can choose to pay with FRNs, but don't have to if you choose to use another legal instrument. Well, if you choose to pay with a bond or bill of exchange of some legal form, what is backing that up? This is where your birth certificate comes into the game. It was sold, in a manner of speaking, or used as collateral for the debt owed to the bankers by the federal government. Joe Blow is born, and his parents file a birth certificate. That certificate is a receipt of property, now filed with the Department of Commerce, and used as a receipt of collateral for the bankers. The Joe Blow corporate person, a business trust created by the feds, will most likely make $1.5 million in his lifetime, and this amount will be depreciated by ongoing, illegal taxation and paid directly to the Federal Reserve banking system to pay off the interest incurred by the federal government for using FRNs. This is how it all works, and exactly why the so-called national debt will never go down until we return to the gold standard and stop giving this ridiculous level of power to the Federal Reserve banking system. The Uniform Commercial Code was built up around the concepts of HJR 192, and has become the supreme law of the land for commercial ventures, which for all intents and purposes accounts for everything. For the all caps individual or person trust, even criminal charges like murder are commercial crimes. All laws today are in commerce, with the UCC reigning as supreme. But what about the United States Constitution? Well, it reigns as the supreme law of the land as well, but you need to understand how, and claim the rights under it here too. That Constitution only applies to the natural-born human being represented by the upper and lowercase name. Unknowingly, you have volunteered to be known as the All Caps Trust corporate entity, and in so doing have waived all your constitutional rights, thus defaulting to make the UCC your supreme law of the land. Want to change that? Then begin studying the UCC with the given contracts and get busy in the filing of your necessary paperwork. How the supreme law of the land should work. Article 6, Paragraph 2 of the United States Constitution is known as the Supremacy Clause. It states, quote, "This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and the treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and that judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary are notwithstanding." Unquote. This means notwithstanding in law, or contrary to law. The translation in modern times? First and foremost, it means that the United States Constitution is an ironclad contract between a limited, centralized federal government, the way it was designed to be, and the people. The people are the clear beneficiaries of this contract, and at all times you need to ask for the enforcement of this contract in your favor. Here is something strong to back you up. Marbury versus Madison. Key case at 5 U.S. 137. Recorded at Volume 5, 1803, page 137, the judge in this case, John Marshall, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, states that anything which is in conflict with the Constitution is null and void at law. Does this include amendments to the Constitution made by the Congress? Yes, it most certainly does. Does it include totalitarian acts, such as Patriots 1 and 2, as well as the preceding anti-terrorist acts? Absolutely. Clearly, this case sets a precedent which protects your original common law rights as declared by the original United States Constitution. Quote, "For a secondary law to come into conflict with the supreme law is totally illogical, for certainly the supreme law would prevail over all other laws, and certainly our forefathers had intended that the supreme law would be the basis of all law, and for any law to come into conflict with the supreme law is null and void at law. It would bear no power to enforce, It would bear no obligation to obey. It would report to settle as if it never existed. For unconstitutionality would date from the enactment of such a law, not from a date so granted in an open court of law. No courts are bound to uphold it. No citizens are bound to obey it. It operates as a mere nullity of fiction, which means it does not exist in law. Unquote. Wow! Pretty powerful and directly to the point, wouldn't you say? How many acts, bills, titles, codes, or any other kinds of laws can you think of that are in direct opposition of the original Constitution today? It is supposed to be the supreme law of the land even today. Any oppressive vaccination bill which violates your right to privacy and unwarranted search and seizure is also against the supreme law of the land. Shepherd citations are a set of court recordings which keep track of all the court cases that have come and gone, especially within the Supreme Court. They clarify all of the cases that ever go before the courts. Marbury v. Madison is standing very strong from its inception in 1803, over 200 years later in 2004. It has been used over 200 times, accounting for over 9 pages of this set of citations, and has yet to be overturned by any other case or judge. As an American, you can only give up your constitutional rights by signing them away, which is what you have done time and time again without knowing. You need to learn where you are doing this and stop doing it. First and foremost is to not sign any form of license with the state for a marriage. Why would you want to do this? It alerts the government of your private information, volunteers you and your new spouse to give up your constitutional rights together and live by the laws of the United States Corporation, and by the corporate charter of your particular state. When you sign a marriage license, the state is now a third party legally in your marriage. Your children, considered in common law as the property of the parents until adulthood, are now one-third ward of the state. You have to consider them when making all decisions about your children's lives. If you make a decision which is contrary to what the state believes, they have a legal right to protect a piece of their property, your child, and step in whether you like it or not. If you truly want to protect your children and family from state vaccination oppression, the first thing you must do is rescind your marriage license through public declaration. Your marriage can be recorded in a Bible, or any other spiritual text of your choosing for posterity, which makes the union real in the eyes of God and keeps the state out of your bedroom. The Supreme Court has ruled in hundreds of cases that the rights of the people means the right of each and every human being equally. This has been especially true when defending the Second Amendment for bearing arms. The Constitution says this right shall not be infringed, and there are no subparagraphs describing the ways of this infringement. Thus, it means all infringement shall be forbidden. If someone ever tries to forcefully vaccinate you or your child, no matter what prima facie law, colorful law, may be pushed in your face, you must start yelling, and loudly. 1. I claim you are stealing my rights. 2. I claim infringement on my rights to life, liberty, and happiness under the First Amendment. 3. I claim impingement. 4. I claim encroachment. 5. I claim usurpation of my legal constitutional rights. 6. If you violate any of my constitutional rights, I will sue and attach everything you own. Dealing with bad guys. Here are some more bureaucratic eliminators that have worked like raid on roaches for people attempting to protect themselves from government or any other official fraud over the past few decades. They are great to use in tight situations. 1. I want you to know that I fully accept your oath of office in this matter, and as a result, I expect you to uphold all my unalienable rights. 2. What gives you the authority to speak to me in this abusive manner? Or, for that matter, what gives them the authority to speak to you at all? Remember that any manner in which they speak to you is abusive if they do not have the proper delegated authority, and thus you are being damaged with every word. 3. Where does your delegated authority come from to demand or ask these things of me? I would like to see that delegated authority immediately if we are to continue talking. Be careful here, since they may simply flash a badge and say, here is my authority. A badge means nothing. You have the right to see the delegated authority in writing before you speak to anyone demanding anything of you. 4. Are you going to uphold all of my unalienable rights during the course of my interactions with you? 5. All right. I claim that I am not resisting or evading my responsibilities in any way here. I accept your oath of office in this matter, as well as what you are saying to me. Kindly verify in writing and signed under the penalty of perjury that you have proper delegated authority to compel me to do everything you are asking me to do against my will, and I will comply. To this day in Gregorian calendar history, no one has ever received anything from any official signed under the penalty of perjury. Another maxim under the common law is equality under the law is paramount. If they are asking you to sign things under the penalty of perjury, you have the unalienable right as well to compel them to do the same. P.S. They will never do this as long as the sun keeps rising in the sky, because 99% of all officials you meet act outside the boundaries of their delegated authority, assuming they even have any authority or oath of office to uphold your rights and the Constitution. You need to understand who you truly are. You are a sovereign, free spiritual being that cannot be pushed around by any bureaucratic thug, but only if you claim that you are indeed sovereign and free. This is an old saying among freedom circles which applies to every day of your life. If you don't know your rights, then you don't have any. This is not whim, rather it is an actual maxim of legal precedent. All your life, you have been trained by the corporate media to respect authority, to cooperate, and to go along and get along without asking any questions. This is how the average person lives as a slave, an all-caps piece of trust property pledged to the money powers in this corporate matrix they call life. Life. Until you stand up and declare your freedom, you are indeed a slave. Unless you say otherwise, you are indeed their all-caps piece of property, void of any rights and granted certain privileges upon good behavior as their slave. You should never answer any questions of anyone who claims authority over you. Here is the way this game is played. He who asks the questions and continues to ask the questions wins. You should never communicate about anything over the telephone. Always instruct the person on the other end of the phone that you do not do business in this way. Instruct them to place everything in writing and send it to you. When you receive their mishmash, write the following across it, returning the items to them within 3 business days. Accepted for value as true. I am returning this to you for settlement and closure of this matter for failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. I accept your oath of office, and I do not wish to contract with you. If you think you are representing me, you are hereby fired. As a sovereign American, you can as well claim your rights under Marbury v. Madison as legal and true. The case has never been overturned after over 200 years standing strong. You claim your rights from the Constitution as you say they are, not as they say they are. A strategy for dealing with school DCF officials, including school lawyers that are blocking your child's access to school. 1. Get the exact names of the people blocking your child access to school. 2. Send a Public Records Act request to them on their authority to act as they do. See Forms section. 3. Charge them $1,000 if they do not answer request, and then $1,000 per day for your damages and inconvenience if your child is still not allowed to attend school. 4. Invoice them for the amount owed to you after 30 days. 5. Follow up on the invoices as would a debt collector. If you feel like you just cannot stand all this confrontation, here is something else you might try. it does not add to the greater good as far as educating people of this vaccine fraud running rampant, but at least you may be able to get your needs met. If you are partial to using medical doctors instead of natural practitioners and have developed a good relationship with some pediatrician, office nurse, or physician assistant, you may try to simply educate him, in private, to the dangers of vaccines and thus your needs. I have noticed that in 50% of the cases, this works well. A strategy I have often recommended is the orange diversion. Work it out with whomever you have to in the office rendering the shots. Use your best communication skills and try not to be intimidating, demanding, or authoritative. Do not waste your time talking to people who are ultra-brainwashed and thus unable to understand you. Sometimes you can bypass the busy doctors running around because they let the nurses or physician assistants administer the vaccines. Obviously, you only care about developing a relationship with the person giving the shots. In many cases, you can get them to understand, even if they do not fully agree, that certainly, if you do not want to have your children vaccinated, you should not be forced to do so. Work all the details of the orange diversion out beforehand, and proceed simply as follows. 1. Bring your children in for their scheduled shots. Have a large orange or two in your purse or pocket. 2. Proceed as usual without attracting any attention to the situation. Just tell your kids they are going into the office for a checkup and to otherwise shut up. 3. The doctor or nurse then gets the shots ready, records the lot numbers and everything else they do in your file, and brings the shots to your room as usual. 4. Keep the door closed and be sure there are no security cameras spying on you. Then take out the oranges and inject them instead of your kids. Be sure to take the oranges with you, very important. You walk out and everyone is happy. Be sure your kids keep quiet as you walk out and pay. The last thing you need is for innocent little Johnny to blurt out, "Wasn't that funny how we gave the shot to the orange?" The First Amendment of the Constitution talks about the pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness. Doesn't the protection of your body, the maintenance of your body, and the bodies of your children as you see fit fall under this right? You are not hurting anyone by refusing medical vaccinations, since it cannot be proven that you or your children are a hazard to anyone if you do not receive medical vaccinations, and you are able to prove this fact with an endless array of scientific fact. Here is another bureaucratic eliminator. Quote, "Sir, or madam, what is it you do not understand about your oath of office to uphold and protect the Constitution? You are aiding and rendering comfort to the enemy by breaking down the laws of our land and breaking your oath of office." Unquote. After all, according to Title 18 U.S.C., Section 2381, in the presence of two or more witnesses to the same overt act or in an open court of law, if you fail to timely move to protect and defend the Constitution of these United States and honor your oath of office, you are subject to the charge of capital felony treason. As well, if any part of any bill or law are found to be unconstitutional, then the entire corpus of the bill is unconstitutional. Is there someone you assume has authority over you, using unconstitutional colorful law as a weapon against your liberty? Is there some phony, pseudo, or colorful official stepping out of the confines of their oath of office to make your life a living hell? Why are you letting him or her ruin your life? Your right to due process is found equally under the 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendments. The 4th states the right of people to be secure in their homes, specifically, quote, "The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, paper, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and the particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized." Unquote. From the 9th Amendment, quote, "The enumeration in this Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people." Unquote. That is to say, your common law rights cannot be violated in any way, shape, or form without probable cause of committing some crime against the common law, by some measurable loss to some other living human being. What this means is that Congress has no authority whatsoever to add on to the Constitution in such a way that would take any rights away previously guaranteed to anyone. If they do, according to Marbury v. Madison, those very add-ons, in whatever form they may be, are to be, 1. Declared null and void, 2. Recognized as having no power to enforce, 3. Recognized as having no obligation to obey, 4. Reported to settle as if they never existed, 5. Known as unconstitutional from the date of enactment, 6. Recognized as no court being bound to uphold them. The 10th Amendment states, quote, "The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people." Unquote. This means the Constitution is a limited contract, meant to limit government. Nor do the police have the power to take away rights previously guaranteed by the Constitution. Marshall v. Kansas City, Missouri, 355 Southwest 2nd, 877-883, states, quote, "Police power is subject to limitations of the federal and state constitutions, and especially to the requirement of due process." Unquote. Some other great facts to remember are Title V, USC, Section 556D, also 557, and Section 706. If you are denied due process of law in any way, all jurisdiction ceases automatically. From American Jurisprudence, Volumes 16, Constitutional Law, Section 97. This volume tells a judge how to interpret the Constitution. Quote, "That the Constitution should receive a liberal interpretation in favor of the citizen is especially true with respect to those provisions which were designed to safeguard the liberty and security of the citizen in regard to both person and property." Unquote. See Note 31, Breyers v. United States, 273, U.S. 28. Quote, "And a constitutional provision intended to confer a benefit should be liberally construed in favor of the clearly intended and expressly designated beneficiary, you. Similarly, a provision intended to afford a remedy to those who have just claimed should receive a beneficial construction for the purpose of extending the remedy to all who might fairly come within the meaning of the terms." Unquote. Forced vaccinations fall under the category of unreasonable seizure of your body, or the bodies of your children. They are the epitome of seizure of your being. You should always ask for specific performance from any court in favor of you, the beneficiary of the contract, which is the United States Constitution. Contract law states that any contract shall be enforced most favorable in favor of the non-preparer, you. You have a right to claim specific performance of the Constitution. Politicians think they also have the right to do whatever they want during a declared emergency. Also a falsehood, according to American jurisprudence. Section 98, Effect of Public Emergency. Quote, "While an emergency cannot create power, and no emergency justifies the violation of any of the provisions of the United States Constitution or state constitutions." Unquote. On the other hand, a contention that a grave emergency such as a depression should permit construction of the constitutional provisions which would meet the emergency was rejected in one case, the court holding that neither the legislature nor any executive or judicial officer may disregard the provisions of the Constitution in cases of an emergency where the plain and unequivocal terms of the Constitution present no question of construction as to departures in emergencies. Unquote. How clear can you get? Even in declared emergencies, the spin doctor politicians cannot disregard your constitutional rights. Nowhere in the Constitution does it state that your rights can be suspended due to any emergency. More goodies from American jurisprudence. Section 117. the courts are not at liberty to search for meanings beyond the instrument of the Constitution. The courts must apply the terms of the Constitution as written. Section 155. The courts are not at liberty to overlook or disregard the constitutional demands. If the Constitution prescribes one rule and the statute another, and a different rule, it is the duty of the courts to declare the Constitution and not the statute governs in cases before them for judgment. Section 255, 256. An unconstitutional law is null and wholly void. An unconstitutional law is null and void from the date of enactment. No repeal of these unconstitutional laws are necessary. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law. Sections 257, 258. On the other hand, it is clear that Congress cannot, by authorization or ratification, give the slightest effect to a state law or constitution which is in conflict with the Constitution of the United States. Religious freedom. The section following this chapter provides you with different methods of fighting for your common law rights, giving you the power of choosing whether or not to vaccinate your child. Many people whimper under such stress, saying they'd rather vaccinate their kids than have to fight the system. I have also known people who have gone to local courts on the issue and lost, simply because their case was based on asking the wrong questions. In America, we have religious freedom. Not merely the freedom to practice whatever recognized, organized religion we choose, but to practice freely a religion of one if we choose to, even if no one in the world has ever heard of our religion before. We can be called the Church of the Rabbit in the Moon, worshipping that fictional character. One of the tenets of this religion is that it forbids vaccines, and if anyone makes you go against that tenet by mandating a vaccine on you or your family, they are violating your rights to freely exercise your religious beliefs granted under the Constitution. That is why practically all states have religious exemptions to vaccinations in their laws. You don't have to have a silly religion like the above example to avoid vaccines. Simply put, your religion is how you choose to relate with God by the Constitution through common law. You can have your body as part of that worship. Your body is God's temple. It could be your belief that this body, which is given to you by God as a divine temple, cannot be altered with man-made, and thus inferior, chemicals and mixtures, such as vaccines. It can be the belief in your personal religion that only God-made substances will pass through your body and bloodstream. It can be your religious belief that only your God-given immune system will protect you from germs and other contagions. That it is a mortal sin to place medical chemicals into your body temple to alter God's perfection. It can be your religious standpoint that receiving a disease naturally and healing from it naturally is a necessary part of growing and living in God's world. You should ask anyone who challenges you on this point, "Are you attempting to deny me my constitutional right to religious freedom?" Some schools I have dealt with in the past have declared personal religions that are not the normal organized ones we usually hear about as frivolous or not a valid religion. Your next good question should be, "Be so kind as to explain to me the legal definition of a frivolous or valid religion." Medical and school officials would have to be quite dim-witted if they answered this question, since any answer would wind up becoming a constitutional violation of your rights, regardless of what is written in your state's vaccination statute. Another great question to ask anyone attempting to push an oppressive statute on you is, "Are you trying to deny me due process of the law by making a legal determination right now?" This statement is my favorite bureaucratic melter. Some states have limited the religious exemption to vaccines, writing that the exemption needs to be of a well-recognized denomination whose teachings include reliance on prayer or spiritual means alone for healing. The same limits also require a person to be an adherent member of the religious organization. Now, before you run out and join the local Christian Science Church to avoid oppressive vaccines, remember, you must learn to be a bulldog when it comes to this issue. The simple wording of religious exemptions such as this, which claim an exemption must be of a specific, well-recognized religious denomination, would more than likely be held as unconstitutional by any court, if not totally void primarily for its vagueness. The good news is that most state vaccine statutes are not written this way. More and more churches as well are speaking out against compulsory vaccines, so keep strong. By asking the right questions, you will prevail. I've also found a religion called the Church of Christ Consciousness. I've taken the time to be sure all the documents validating this church worship under the Constitution of these United States. You can become an adherent member of this church at any time. We ask for a one-time donation of $25, USFRN, if you are able. You will receive a packet of detailed information explaining the religious tenets of the church, which include reliance on prayer or spiritual means alone for healing, as well as detailed instructions on beating vaccination bureaucracy by standing firm in these religious beliefs. Understand, this does not mean that you are vowing to never use medicines or other remedies, or attend different religious functions. Part of the prayer practices of this church include receiving inner messages from God, which guide you to the correct therapies to use for yourself and your children in extreme, life-threatening situations only. Otherwise, these religious tenets do not permit you to use medications, vaccinations, or other remedies as a means of healing. You will receive a document stating that you are an adherent member of this religious faith. And yes, you can be an adherent member of two religions at the same time. You don't have to give up any other family religion to be a member of the Church of Christ Consciousness. Further information on becoming involved in this church can be found in the documents section. It is also important to understand that this issue may very well turn out to be a huge issue. Regardless of your creator-endowed, natural, and unalienable rights, most state courts believe that an individual does not have absolute freedom from state invasion of his body. This terrible fact is rooted, once again, in the religion of the medical profession that preaches the doctrine of the germ theory. They have convinced politicians and lawmakers at large to adhere to this doctrine, otherwise burn in the eternal damnation of epidemic and contagious disease death rate increases, of which they would be deemed fully responsible. State courts have always ruled, up to this point anyway, that the individual, regardless of religious or other belief, has an obligation to society to help prevent the spread of contagious disease. Being a citizen of the state, and a member of society thus, you must give up your common law right of freedom from body invasion to some extent for the good of the state. What form of government is this beginning to sound like? State courts rule time and time again that they have authority over a person's individual rights, since the rights of the citizen of a state as a group are more important than a single individual's rights. Therefore, in the event of any state interest, you and your children can be forcefully medicated with vaccines. Now, it doesn't stop there. Otherwise, everything we have written thus far is a waste of time. Again, success in this legal arena all comes down to having a clear mind, keeping calm, and asking the right questions. If you can do that, you will avoid going to court altogether without ever having to speak to a lawyer or have your children vaccinated. Once the right questions are asked, you are backing school and health department professionals in a corner they can only get out of if they answer those questions. What the medical cartel fears most is that these questions could lead to a legal process when brought before a judge that very possibly could create a legal precedent, which could change the way courts now look at compulsory vaccines. This very threat of legal precedent is what keeps you from having to pay a lawyer, go to court, and adhere to compulsory vaccine laws. The courts have ruled that pharmaceutical companies must adequately warn the consumer of the potentially dangerous propensity of their products. Failure to do so renders their product unreasonably dangerous and exposes them to liability for injuries. Warning a doctor alone is not sufficient to relieve the manufacturer from liability, as was so declared by another legal precedent. The courts have ruled that it is the responsibility of the manufacturer to see that the warnings reach the consumer. This shows that a warning of potential danger regarding any vaccine must reach the patient or parent so that vaccine is not deemed unreasonably dangerous. This can only be done by either your pediatrician directly warning you before administering the shot, or by pamphlet information given directly to you, explaining its warnings and potential risks. Legally, it seems quite inconsistent to require a manufacturer of vaccines to warn the consumer of potential risks and then compel that same consumer to be injected against their will. This is a very solid legal point. If the consumer is not allowed to make a choice after knowing the risks, what good are knowing the risks? This is precisely how the government opens itself up to huge liability year after year from vaccine damage. The laws being written in this way absolve the pharmaceutical companies from liability, since by law, they gave you fair warning your child could become brain damaged. The state becomes more liable then, since they forced you to have the child vaccinated, regardless of the warning, and they pay out millions of dollars each year to prove it. All things being as they are, I suspect the laws have been written this way for good reason. The medical cartel is behind the lobbying efforts which engineered this complicated network of legal and medical fraud. Insurance companies generally refuse to underwrite participation in any compulsory vaccine program. In the 1960s, pharmaceutical companies paid out huge judgments for injuries related to single polio vaccines and Quadrigen, a 4-in-1 vaccine targeted against diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, and polio. Many insurance companies refused coverage for damages related to the swine flu vaccine program on this basis alone. Between 1979 and 1983, a staggering 9,121 lawsuits were filed against the United States for damages related to swine flu and other vaccines, and $1,150,000 was paid out. As of December 1979, for the swine flu vaccine alone, 3,813 administrative claims had been filed for a total of $3,417,000,000 in damages. Of these claims, only 118 were paid. This is merely 3% of the total claims filed, which only paid a total of $2.7 million after settlement. This is a mockery of legal justice and an outrage to society in general. Congress then passed a statute under which the United States accepted liability for injury or death arising out of the administration of the swine flu program. This sealed liability to the U.S. government and absolved the pharmaceutical companies once again. It sure seems that local, state, and federal government wish to be the insurer of the public against injuries or death related to vaccines, having some interesting affection for the pharmaceutical companies and a need to protect them from ongoing legal hassles. Interesting indeed. Will the real government for and of the people please stand up? No one seems to be standing up. Okay then, will the real government masquerading as the government for and of the people please stand up? Unconsented medical treatment further constitutes assault and battery, and exposes medical doctors, hospitals, and the state to liability for money damages due to such treatment. An individual can decide to live in pain, to shorten her life, or even die rather than submit to medical treatment against her wishes. The courts have ruled that, quote, "No right is held more sacred, or is more carefully guarded by the common law, than the right of every individual to the possession and control of his own person, free from restraint of interference of others, unless by clear and unquestionable authority of law." Unquote. Union Pacific Railway Company versus Botsford. An individual, according to the state, however, does not have absolute freedom from invasion of his body. Further, if an individual does not wish protection under the law from the state, he may be excused from the law if the rest of society is not hurt by his actions. This is an important point. The state, parroting doctrine from the medical cartel, will insist control over you and your child's bodies to ensure neither of you become the next Typhoid Mary. But if vaccines truly work, and the bulk of society has received them, what does the state have to worry about? This is a very useful question you should always remember to ask. There could be hundreds of unvaccinated typhoid Marys running about, possibly being carriers for other diseases as well. So what? The other members of society have been vaccinated. Vaccines work. Not a problem. Well, this is a huge problem for the state, because state vaccination programs have never been about protecting the masses from disease. They are primarily about receiving huge money payoffs, masquerading as federal aid to promote vaccine programs. The more vaccines a state enforces, the more money it receives. If one person gets out of the pen and starts spreading the news that they are unvaccinated and doing just fine, word will catch on. Then more and more people would choose not to be vaccinated or subject their children to it. Then the state would argue that we would have larger and larger portions of the population becoming ill with contagious disease, but this is another lie. There have never been any studies comparing the overall health and well-being of unvaccinated people to vaccinated, and the medical cartel never wants an honest study completed in this arena. To do so would thwart their vaccination profits and control of the people, and further open lawmakers to responsibility for ethically questionable laws which have supported compulsory vaccine programs for decades. The plain and simple truth is that unvaccinated people, especially children, are far healthier than the vaccinated population at large. We, as a nation of sovereign people, need to push for a complete moratorium on compulsory vaccines. If this is done, we can effectively study the difference in vaccinated and unvaccinated groups over a long-range study. I will guarantee you and place everything I own on the outcome that the unvaccinated group will be deemed far healthier. Most states also provide medical exemptions to vaccination. This is another avenue of relief from the vaccination Gestapo, in that medical exemptions will no doubt always be written into state laws to cover the state's liability in court. States realize there are many vaccination-related lawsuits begun each year, and people wind up suing the state who they say forced them to vaccinate their now brain-damaged or dead child. Part of the state's legal defense is always their medical exemption to vaccination, and they will propose that it was your responsibility as the parent to be sure your child was medically fit to receive the vaccine. Here's how you can make the medical exemption work for you. Send certified letters titled Requests for Assurance of Medical Treatment and Relief Upon Damage, found in the forms section, to your state and town's Department of Health officials, as well as to any school officials who are blocking your child's entrance due to no vaccines. The letter states that you are willing to comply with the vaccination laws as long as you can be guaranteed the state, town, and a school will cover any and all possible damages that may occur to your child via the vaccine. The letter also requests a guarantee that the vaccine will prevent the particular disease or diseases for which it is being given. The letter does not ask for a guarantee of immunity, because legally and medically, all immunity means is that a person shows antibodies in her blood for a particular disease. Immunity is by no means a guarantee of well-being or prevention from any disease. In many cases, this letter alone will create enough turmoil to allow your child to return to school without vaccines. To my knowledge, no one in the history of mankind has ever signed such a letter, and the chances for ending any vaccination dilemma with your school are high. I have also known of people who try and reason with the pediatrician, asking him to please read the packet insert to them so they can understand what they're getting into. This can lead to the MD granting you the medical exemption, but more likely he will attempt to intimidate you. Pediatricians tell you that there is a greater chance of being struck by lightning than in developing those kinds of side effects, printed clearly in the packet insert from the vaccine. Also, all parents should note that the packet inserts do not mention that the vaccine will prevent the disease it is given for. It only states that it will increase antibody counts, which you now know are totally worthless. In some cases, especially with concern to private schools, the release from liability of disease letter in the forms section works quite well. Notarize this letter and hand it to all school officials and doctors afraid of losing their jobs for not following the law. It places all the emphasis back on you legally for liability in case your child becomes ill, and fully releases the doctor or school from such liability. Another letter provided in the next section is titled Request for Medical Exemption Under State Statute. And it states that there is enough evidence in valid research on vaccinations to suggest your child is eligible for a medical exemption under the law. They always come back at you and say you need a medical doctor to claim a vaccine medical exemption for your child. And if you have a good relationship with an MD somewhere, this can surely make the process move a lot smoother. If you can't get an MD to sign for a medical exemption, then you are still standing on strong legal ground at the common law. If they refuse to sign your certified request for assurance of medical treatment and relief upon damage letter, they would be crazy if they did sign it, as well as refuse you a medical exemption and yet still block access for your child into school, you are building a case to sue the state, town, and school for their actions. Find a lawyer who will support you in this kind of suit. If and when you still have to go to court, your lawyer should be experienced in issues concerning First Amendment rights and free exercise of religion. The court always argues that the health of the state population in general will be at risk if certain individuals are allowed to not vaccinate their children. Your lawyer must be able to prove fully before the court that your decision to not vaccinate can in no way harm society as a whole, especially if vaccinations are truly believed to work and the bulk of school children are vaccinated. Considering this scenario, I would love to see a court rule that vaccination programs cannot be guaranteed effective. That would open up some very interesting doors for debate. In any state court case regarding compulsory vaccines, the state's interest, on the books anyway, is the protection of its citizens from the spread of communicable diseases. It can certainly be argued in the conventional sense that routine compulsory vaccinations should not be permitted to interfere with your religious rights, since there are at present no epidemics running amok, and you are not likely to begin one. The party line is indeed that vaccines have conquered most contagious disease. Whoopsie-doo for that. Since everyone is already safe, why should you have to rescind your religious beliefs of avoiding invasive medical chemicals being injected into your family's bloodstreams? The immediacy of the health factor for contagious disease is no longer so great an issue. Any dispute the state now puts forth only weakens its argument supporting compulsory vaccines. After all, if compulsory vaccines have been so great, why worry about you and your family? The state cannot adequately prove that school children who do not receive vaccines create an immediate or even threatened danger to the other vaccinated school children or the public at large, because to do so invalidates the effectiveness of vaccine programs. A good lawyer can then place the burden on the state to prove a present or threatening danger to the public health, which can occur as a result of your decision to not vaccinate. If the state does present expert witness to defend its case to vaccinate, then your lawyer could present the true side of the scientific and medical vaccine controversy, well cited in this book and known to the public eye in 2000. Many experts cringe at such truth and have difficulty maintaining their poise against the enormous challenge of questioned fact regarding compulsory vaccines. If enough cases are presented to the courts in this manner, I feel the states will have to begin ruling more and more in favor of exemption. This, of course, means more and more people have to legally challenge compulsory vaccines. Without the action of the people, nothing will get done. Here is another way the Request for Assurance of Medical Treatment and Relief Upon Damage letter can be used at your pediatrician's office. Go to the doctor's office with several witnesses and ask your pediatrician to sign it, just in case your child becomes ill or gets hurt in any way from the shots. No doctor in their right mind will ever sign it, so simply walk out with your child and witnesses and say goodbye. Now you are asking better questions. You have shifted the issue to a more complex one of attempting to gain assurance for a medical operation and the possibility of medical malpractice if the doctor refuses to give you that assurance. You then send a letter to the state and town departments of health and the school officials stating that you attempted to get your child vaccinated as they requested, but the doctor would not vaccinate your child. Have your witnesses write up and notarize affidavits confirming this fact. Send the affidavits as long as well. Bureaucrats just love affidavits. They may then tell you to forget about your silly letter of relief and get your child vaccinated anyway. Remember to ask the right questions always with regards to dealing with these bureaucrats. You should then mention that you couldn't help but notice that there is a medical exemption to vaccination written within the law. They will acknowledge there indeed is one. Then ask them how one would know if their child falls under this category. They will say your pediatrician has to determine that due to your child's particular sensitivity or problem which precludes the child from receiving a vaccine. Here's where you have them. If the pediatrician already refused to sign the request for assurance of medical treatment and relief upon damage form, she is confirming her uncertainty, professionally and medically, that your child will not be affected adversely by the vaccine. If the pediatrician who administers the shot is not certain enough to sign a form stating your child will not be harmed after the shot, that is your admission from the pediatrician of a medical exemption. The state can well argue here that you were attempting to coerce the pediatrician into signing something he could not possibly provide a guarantee for, since the packet inserts of all vaccines do claim certain risks. Whenever a person goes in for an operation or takes a medicine of any kind, there are also certain risks. But a person chooses to take medication and have operations. He may not, as is the case here, choose to have a vaccination. Making life a lot easier, however, is the fact that most states stand by their religious exemption clauses without providing any extra trouble for the parents. There are several religions you may become part of, which include anti-vaccination beliefs as religious doctrine. As noted, one such religion is included in the form section. The problem is usually not with the state, but with some ultra-brainwashed school nurse or official who feels they have to save your child from your ill decision-making. Again, the best advice is to be a bulldog. Stand firm in what you believe and know you have God-given, creator-endowed, unalienable rights. When you learn how to exercise your common law rights, this process will become easier and easier. Another very interesting method of avoiding compulsory vaccines deals with your legal right to privacy. This has yet to be used successfully, but the argument has tremendous potential for the future. In court, it can be stated that this right comes from the Bill of Rights, the 9th and 14th Amendments. The right to personal privacy is based on the theory that the individual has the right to control his own body and to make fundamental decisions about his own life. This right extends to children as well. As well as religious exemption, this right is limited by the particular state's compelling interest. The state could be made to show sufficient interest in order to override a person's right to privacy with regards to his decision not to vaccinate. In the past, this right has been used successfully with respect to abortion, euthanasia, drugs to mental patients, and making certain kinds of important decisions with respect to one's body. Vaccines are proven to be harmful to the body, and by their very nature, are an assault on the body. There is always the risk of dangerous side effects, as noted by the manufacturer. If the decision to be vaccinated or not falls within the control over one's body, it is therefore protected by the constitutional right of privacy. State prosecutors would be hard-pressed to meet the burden of proof, showing a state interest compelling enough to override the fundamental right to privacy. In this case, they would be required to show that a child who was not vaccinated would be presenting a great risk to her health. Given the ever-mounting public evidence demonstrating the exact opposite, this would be extremely difficult for a prosecutor to do. Remember, the party line is that public health has been improved vastly from the time these laws were first passed, and vaccines are the heroes. If a prosecutor argues this party line, he is again going against the vaccination claim to fame, and most courts do not want to open those doors. Playing the legal chess game in this way is very important. The majority of people are vaccinated today because they want to be, and they believe vaccines keep their children healthy, much like a good bloodletting. The majority of people then, by the popular vote, are fully protected from the wonders of vaccine technology. Surely society cannot be harmed if a certain segment of the population chooses to object to and refrain from vaccines. Another way to understand the common law is to realize that you have many other rights granted to you by God alone that the Constitution of these United States cannot infringe upon. Most Americans believe their rights are granted them by the Bill of Rights and the Constitution primarily, but this is not how our country was formed. First and foremost, you have God-given, Creator-endowed, unalienable rights to pure health and happiness, and to be a sovereign without subjects in your own home. The 9th and 10th Amendments to the Constitution confirm this fact. Quote, "The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others, other rights, retained by the people. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people." Unquote. The 14th Amendment reads, quote, "No slavery nor involuntary servitude shall exist in the United States or any place subject to its jurisdiction." Unquote. In reading this amendment, one has to wonder why slavery and involuntary servitude are distinguished from one another. Any idea why? They seem like the same thing, but they are very different. Involuntary servitude is placed in the 14th Amendment to distinguish it from voluntary servitude, which is the basis of any legal contract under commercial law. Just so you know, under United States commercial law, whenever you sign a contract, you waive all your rights and are now bound by the contents of that contractual agreement you signed. What kinds of contracts have you become involved in without prior knowledge? There are many, so to save time, we'll focus on the one that relates to compulsory vaccinations, and that is a marriage license. A typical state marriage license reads, quote, "The state is a party to every marriage contract of its own residents, as well as the guardians of its morals." Unquote. Every marriage license is thus an agreement to a three-way legal marriage between the husband, the wife, and the state. All children of these types of marriages are thus wards of the state, as well as children of the marriage. So now your child goes to a state-funded public school, and they say, no shots, no school. The state can rule that due to your marriage contract. It has an equal say in the welfare of your children. You have to consider the state thus in all the vital decision-making processes you make as parents. What form of government does this sound like? Does this particular marriage contract mean that if you don't comply with vaccination laws, the state will come into your home and forcefully vaccinate you and your children? Probably not now, but this is a real possibility for the future, unless public awareness of vaccination fraud increases. Public awareness has become the primary motivation for writing this book. God only knows I won't get rich from it. The marriage contract does constitute a three-party contract with the state the couple resides in, and it entitles the couple to certain privileges under state law, such as the privilege to send your children to public school. Part of exercising this privilege, however, is to follow your state's laws and to vaccinate your children. After all, they are one-third the ward of the state. A state cannot deny a married couple their common law rights, as long as the exercise of those rights does not harm anyone else. But a state can deny a married couple a privilege. This is the legal basis for the no shots, no school issue. If the state finds you in any way a bad parent, they can also walk in through DCF and remove your children from your home. I agree that in some cases, children do need to be removed from abusive environments, and in this capacity, the DCF is necessary. Where is the line drawn, however? Who decided where that line is? We do as a people, but if we don't speak up, they will decide for us. Why is all this happening? I have a brother who once said to me that conspiracies like this could never happen because they would be discovered and printed all over the grand media and broadcasted on every TV channel. Well, I wish this were truly how our world works today, but as many of you realize, this is just not so. The United States free press and media print and broadcast whatever party line they are instructed to print and broadcast. In the rare case that something of truth really does reach a special primetime news show, it is only for a short segment. People soon forget or fall back onto a psychological state of denial and disbelief called, "That just can't be." I only wish the material presented in this book were not true. Over the years I've been compiling research on the subject, I have gone through an array of emotions and states of denial, only to be presented with more and more blatant evidence. The fact that vaccines create cancer, autism, and other degenerative neurological disorders is so blatantly obvious from the perspectives of both science and law that the issue is no longer up for debate. This very real health threat, pandemic by its own creation, will render most of the world's population complete with neurological and varying levels of brain dysfunction within the next few decades if we do not put a stop to it now. That means right now. Many people over the years have asked me how and why this all could be happening. These are very good questions that everyone should start with. From all my research on the subject, I offer you three possible scenarios as an answer. 1. The most obvious and the primary premise of this book is common greed. A complex strata of people too busy to look at the facts because they are too busy counting profits, as well as figuring new ways to avoid litigation and create new profits. Blinded by their holy cash cow, they refuse to see how the germ theory and all its byproducts, like vaccines, are destroying the very core of civilization. They hear the statistics on cancer and autism and do everything they can to deny any correlation to vaccines and other medications simply because of their love of money. Even though they promote vaccines on all other children, the smart ones within the system reaping the profits will not vaccinate their own kids because they really do know better. Mark my word on that. 2. The most unlikely is that they really believe they are doing good, fervently believe what they have been told about the germ theory, and are just too stubborn to think otherwise. I have pondered this premise quite a bit over the past decade, and with each year it becomes more and more ridiculous due to overwhelming evidence to the contrary. I do believe, however, that many medical doctors fall into this category. 3. The most frightening, however quite possible scenario, is a conspiracy of a number of individuals in mega power positions around the globe, most likely organized together in some fashion to control the masses of the Earth's population for their sole benefit. Obviously, we would be referring to the Illuminati in this scenario. Numerous reports over the past 4 decades suggest the presence within government and other powerful organizations of a demonic-like faction that has become ever-present. With carefully planned precision to its movements and goals, this faction has secretly operated within many government agencies for years, most likely with its ultimate goal to consume all. The members of this faction know vaccines and other medical programs are totally counterproductive to human existence, and they have planned it that way. They believe the other people of the world are inferior and use them for whatever purposes suit their benefit. They use the venues of mandatory vaccine programs and their influence to enforce police power on such mandates. For such massive genetic experiments, population control by inducing illness, the intentional altering of brain activity for mind control, the intentional creation of brain damage in children, so select populations of people never get too smart to claim any true power for themselves, and even genocide of certain populations if they deem necessary. Does anyone really know what is in those shots? It has never ceased to amaze me that parents allow their children, the most precious aspects of their lives, to be injected with substances they know nothing about. If this does not change, and fast, mankind can very well be subject to extinction at the will of whatever group of people decide to rule the world. This may sound like science fiction, folks, but I assure you, I have not overdosed on the X-Files. This scenario can be very real. One should very seriously consider in today's world the reality of scenario number 3 above. The pharmaceutical industry is owned and controlled by the same conglomerate corporate mobsters that are attempting to keep you and your children in slavery. This industry is completely unregulated. Any pseudo-regulation from any agency which has a vested financial interest in selling vaccines and drugs, for example, the FDA, is similar to the fox being granted regulatory authority over the henhouse. It's all a game, and they assume you are just too stupid, too afraid, too busy, too addicted, or too sick to know what they are really doing. So it continues. Do you really believe this vaccine and drug industry has your best interest in mind? Do you really believe they respect the sanctity of your children and act first in their best interest? It is all a fairy tale. It is, in reality, more likely that this conglomerate has a tremendous agenda of control in mind for your life and the lives of your future generations. Control of your financial world via bogus laws, via IRC 26, the impossible-to-decipher Internal Revenue Code. Control of your mind through a never-ending bombardment of images, sounds, phrases, and manufactured emergencies, all carefully designed to turn you into Pavlov's dog. Control of your diet through the introduction of hundreds of addictive chemicals and other additives into the manufactured food supply. And now, control of your body through the constant onslaught of injected chemicals via vaccines or oral chemicals in the case of medications. Is it really so far-fetched, paranoid, and or conspiracy-minded to believe that rather than benevolence, they actually have a malevolent agenda in mind, which would include the following? 1. The intentional addition of carcinogens and other poisons to vaccines to keep a constant level of disease in any chosen population for profit. 2. The intentional addition of slow killer poisons into the vaccines of any given population that has been selected for genocide. 3. The intentional addition of brain toxins into children's vaccines, placed there to purposely render future generations more dull intellectually and more passive to any purported authority. In essence, to ensure that future generations are more autonomous, less creative, and obedient worker robots for the good of the state. 4. The seeding of select populations with disease-creating microchips, able to create a certain disease at a certain time in life. 5. The addition of microchips that lay dormant and undetected, but can be activated via satellite at any time to spontaneously end the life of any human being who becomes a problem to the state. 6. The addition of microchips that emit a unique carrier frequency for each human being, used as a tracking device able to locate anyone via satellite. We, as a race of beings, need to stand up immediately and realize that these scenarios are not mere science fiction. In today's greedy technological nightmare of a world, these scenarios are quite possible. When you consider all the facts, you can deduce from logic that they are even quite probable. We need to stand together in our power and ask good questions while we still have power and the ability to use our voices. I have faith that things can change for the better, but I am certain they will not unless more and more people wake up. My sole intention for writing this book is to help you wake up so that, hopefully, you will wake up someone else. Then, hopefully, they may wake up someone else, and then, hopefully... It is my prayer and constant vision that we will grow someday to understand the full meaning and responsibility of true sovereignty and freedom. Greed and the greedy must perish. Clarence Darrow, the defending attorney for the schoolteacher in the famous Scopes Monkey Trial in 1925, is one of my all-time favorite Americans, and played very well by Jack Lemmon in the new version of Inherit the Wind. Rent it. He had this to say of the medical profession, cartel, back in the 1930s. Quote, "The efforts of the medical profession in the United States to control the treatment of human ailments is not due to its love of humanity. It is due to its love of its job, which it proposes to monopolize. It has been carrying on a vigorous campaign all over the country against new methods of schools of healing, because it wants all the business and insists that nobody shall live or die without its services. Whether it cures more or fewer people than schools which do not use its medicines, or whether it cures anybody at all, are debatable questions which I shall not attempt to discuss. I stand for anybody's right to regulate their own life, so long as it doesn't infringe on other people's rights to do the same. If a man wants to live or die without the aid of the medical profession, he should be permitted to do so. If he hasn't this right, it is pretty hard to tell what right he should have. Now, I would have no argument with the medical profession if they would leave me alone. I am willing that they should advertise their wares, but I object to being forced to patronize them. They have specifics, vaccines, to prevent one from catching almost every disease, yet not one of them can explain how the prevention is brought about, nor can he prove that it does prevent. They are not content to vaccinate only those who apply to them, but they ask the state to compel everyone to be vaccinated. I might as well ask the state to compel everyone to hire me to try their law cases. Sometimes if they keep on, and they will keep on if the people give them the chance, they will be able to vaccinate us for everything, and we shall be compelled to submit. I have watched this medical profession for a long time, and it bears watching, and I know that there is not a single thing affecting human life that they will not lay their hands on if we give them the chance. Unquote. What a perfect ending to this text. Nothing says it better. Learn your rights and exercise them well before it's too late, and you lose all of them. Remember, stating it clearly about the true nature of law or lawlessness today is this. If people do not know their rights, then they have none. This medical cartel is looking to consume every aspect of our lives, and only the people, empowered with the truth of their sovereign rights to freedom, can stop them. There is still time to stop them, and I urge everyone reading this text to reach out, speak out, share what they have learned, and move forward. It can be done. I've got one more quote to repeat for you from Winston Churchill. Quote, "It is better to fight when there is little chance of winning than to have to fight when there is no chance at all." Unquote. God bless America. God bless us all.